home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller. Everybody, welcome back to Rated G Radio. We've got a fun show tonight. For the next hour, we're going to be talking with murder mystery and also humor writer. How is that for a 1-2 punch? That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Gail Carline. Gail is going to be joining the show in just a very quick moment, and we're going to be grilling her on life as an author and all the cool things that are going on in her world. I can't wait to have her back on. We need to have her on, like, all the time, because she's just absolutely fun to talk to and a real treat as an author. You're going to love her books. If her name is new to you after tonight, you'll want to check out the Rated G Radio Superstar swag page. She's our featured author of the week, and you can find a ton of her books on the first page of the books on that page. We'll talk more about that a little bit later. Tomorrow, I want to do a real quick reminder that we're going to have Mary Lou Monroe Ray. We always say it, the usual start time for the Friday night dance party. This last 6 months, there's been no usual start times. If we do it at 7 o'clock in the evening, it's just as common as doing it at 3 in the afternoon or 9 a.m. like we're doing next Friday with Pink Cigar out of London. But tomorrow, we're going to have Mary Lou Monroe Ray out of Brisbane, Australia, interview Caroline Hammond. And that interview is going to take place at 7 p.m. our time, because I think that's like noon or 1 p.m. in Brisbane. And as luck would have it, people here and people there are both awake at those hours. So that kind of works out really, really cool. Real quick programming note, not having to do with Rated G Radio, I'll let you know that Saturday, I'm actually hosting two different shows. Well, one I'm actually... When I say hosting, I should just say I'm part of, and then whatever the people that run the thing want to call me, that's great. But I'm doing call screening and announcing calls and kind of moderating the show for Geneviève Volsatter. That's her angel show on the Women in Intuition Network. And then I'm also rejoining Rob Watson on OutInSantaCruz.com. But it's Out in Santa Cruz. That's the program name or the show name, but it's on KSCO 1080 AM. In Santa Cruz, if anybody has an AM radio any longer. But you can listen to the entire program online on outinsantacruz.com. Saturday night at 7 o'clock. Had so much fun last week. Rob invited me back to do a top 10 Halloween song list, and I just don't know where Witch Sisters Halloween is going to end up on that list, but we're going to hope it's going to make that top 10. I'm going to cross my fingers. Not that I have an in with the show and heavily influenced the list or anything. Certainly wouldn't say that at all. But now, without further ado, it is my, and I wish I had a drum roll or mad applause here, but it's with great pleasure I bring back Gail Carline to the show. Gail, how in the heck are you?
Well, I'm the heck fine, Garrett. How are you?
Well, I've had like two glasses of my green tea infused with blueberry that I now drink as my go-to drink during the course of the day. So I'm a little amped up because I knew you were going to be here and we're going to be so super high energy. I just wanted to make sure that I met with the show with that same enthusiasm tonight. So I had no idea
that green tea and blueberries had so much oomph in them.
Well, they probably don't. I don't think they really have any oomph. I'm just excited to have you here. So I'm using my green tea as an excuse to be excited for you. But, and for everybody who is listening to the show, if you're newer to the show, and I say that only because the show has kind of like gone crazy this year with everybody tuning in all the time. Gail was on the show probably about a year ago. Does that sound about right? Yeah, it's about a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, she just had her book called Murder on the Hoof come out. And I read the book, so super fun. And I will tell you, if you like horses, if you like murder, and you like mystery, this is a book that you want to pick up. But unfortunately, well, I suppose, Gail, if you wanted to talk about Murder on the Hoof, we could do that. But I was going to say, unfortunately, we're not here to talk about that tonight. We're here to talk about your 10th anniversary and three new books and everything else that's going on in your world. So where should we start?
Oh, gosh, I'm all aflutter. Well, I guess let's talk about, my excitement. I'm getting ready for Saturday. This year marks my 10th anniversary of writing a humor column for my hometown newspaper, the Placentia News-Times. For those of you who've never been to Orange County, that's in North Orange County. I am 15 minutes from Disneyland, and that should tell you everything you want to know. so I've been writing a newspaper column for them every week, one column a week for 10 years now. And I thought, you know, my next mystery isn't really due to come out until next year, but I want to do something to commemorate the year that, you know, I'm pretty excited that I've been doing this for 10 years. So I thought, I know, I will release a book of my columns, which I have two books out there right now of my columns. And then I thought, no, let's release three books of columns because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, excess is not enough, right?
Right, yeah. Three books all at once, you know.
Yeah.
But if you're going to do it, you're going to do it big. That's just the Gail Carline way. So having you do this is not surprising in the least. But you've categorized your three books in three very unique, different aspects of obviously the genres, but you know, three different categories. What are the categories and what are they called?
Let me first say that my weekly column is it sounds narcissistic. It's all about me, but it's not. It's about things that happen to me that probably happen to you too. It's very slice of life. If anybody remembers Irma Bombeck, I strive and climb the mountain to become, you know, as funny and as witty as Irma Bombeck was. So I've got, you know, most of them is about, you know, the dryer catching fire or, you know, the time the dog was sick or whatever. So I've got one category of one book that is about my family. And it's called Raising the Perfect Family and Other Tall Tales. Then another book is, it's centered on anything I wrote about my hometown of Placentia. And when I usually tell people I'm from Placentia, they kind of gurgle and trip over that word and say, you're from where? So the title of the book is, You're From Where? And then, of course, the third book, I just decided, why not holidays? The holidays are fast approaching. You know, it's Halloween in a couple of weeks, which means the Christmas decorations are already out. So let's do some holidays. So that one's called Holly Jolly Holidays.
So when you got ready to put all of this together, Gail, I know you said, you know, let's do one book, and then it became three. Did you have any difficulty trying to narrow down the out of the 10 years of columns? I mean, you know, because that's a lot of – that's a lot of writing. Did you have difficulty picking the chapters or the stories that went into each?
I did. And I pulled out the stories that I thought would go into each. And then I had to what is the term? Winnow them down. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I thought, you know, I could put all my holidays in one book. Well, no, that was 80 columns. That's way too much for a book. Nobody wants to sit through all that because, it would have been a 500-page book, basically. I did just use Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's for the holiday books.
Okay, and so when what would be an example of one of the stories that you might have in Holly Jolly? It's called Holly Jolly Holidays. So what would be one of your favorite stories? What's your favorite story out of all of those?
My favorite story is actually just an essay about, because basically these are essays. It's an essay about how in Southern California we put on this face of Christmas that we don't actually live. You know, for example, we have Christmas trees with flocking on them as if it snows here, you know. And we send out the Christmas cards with the glitter and the snow and the, you know, we don't bundle up and have the hot cocoa. You know, it's 90 degrees and the trash cans are rolling down the street with the Santa Ana winds. And I thought, you know, maybe we should just embrace that. And so I redid some of the Christmas carols to match, you know, Southern California. So, Jingle Bells ends up Jingle Chimes, you know, because your neighbor's always got chimes on the porch. Krusty the Mud Boy instead of Frosty the Snowman, and, you know, things like that. So it's probably my favorite.
I love that. I mean, and it's something, you know, unless you've, well, I suppose the book, you know, since you're Californianizing the book, you know, people who live in lots of other places across the country, I think will probably relate to this because, you know, not everything is this idyllic, you know, like Northern New York or New Hampshire or Vermont Christmas where, you know, you still have a horse-drawn carriage and everything is just so lovely and idyllic. I don't really think anybody really lives in that unless you're in like the Northeast. And even then it's pretty for like the first 15 minutes. And then once the, you know, the slush hits and the ice hits and everything else, you know, you're going, I can't wait to get out to Southern California for New Year's because this is driving me nuts. So I think a lot of people will be able to relate.
I grew up in the middle of Illinois, and you know, of course, we had snow for Christmas and snow for New Year's and snow for Easter and snow for, you know, we had snow, and you know, we had an ice storm on Good Friday. It was after the first beautiful snowfall. It's old, and having to go and scrape your car window and brush off the porch, and you can't wear your cute shoes at all until spring. You know, so you know, I understand and empathize with that, but out here in Southern California, you know, let's not kid ourselves. You know, we should just decorate our palm trees
Right.
and sing different songs, you know.
So, what is your family's experience on Christmas? What would be a typical Christmas at the Carline household?
Typical Christmas on a, well, you know, typical has changed over the years because typical used to be, you know, when our son was small, was you wake up Christmas morning and Santa has been here and everybody has a stocking, and that part is still true. Everyone has a stocking, even the dogs and the cat and the horses. And when we had the gecko, Ben had his own little stocking, and Marcus's little stuffed toy. For anybody who knows my son, they can torture him with this little tidbit. Marcus had a very favorite stuffed toy that he took everywhere, and it was a Simba lion cub, and Simba had his own stocking. And so, you know, we open presents and we check the stockings, and we have Cinnabons for breakfast, and then we would go over to the family's house for turkey and ham and all that kind of stuff. So that was our typical Christmas. And of course, over the years, you know, the sunny boy grows up. They tend to do that. And now he lives in Long Beach. So, and he is hired by a church to sing on Sunday morning or on Christmas morning. So I'll see him maybe, you know, 12:30, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So Dale and I open our presents, and then Dale goes in and watches like a ball game or something, and Marcus comes in and he opens his gifts. It's kind of, it's not as Norman Rockwell, you know, as it used to be.
Okay, this has nothing to do with your books, but I'm going to ask the question anyway because I respect you as a writer and as a human being and as somebody who I think is marvelously funny in so many different ways. So it just really amazes me that you write these murder mystery books because I think you're hysterical. But do you think that this Norman Rockwell version of what a holiday, quote unquote, should be, has really given the other 99.999% of America a you know, a bad expectation on what you should be doing, you know, for the holidays? 'Cause, I mean, I know a lot of folks now who, you know, either it's religious or monetary or whatever, you know, they are choosing either not to celebrate the holidays or they celebrate it completely differently or they just don't do anything, you know, they just do, you know, their own, was it Festivus for the rest of us type of a thing and have a great time on their own. But the Norman Rockwell thing, I think, is really like scarred us. You know, for I think many families. Did that impact
Oh
your family at
yeah,
all?
I think, you know, I think to a certain extent you have to kind of roll with the punches. You know, I still enjoy Christmas, even though, you know, I enjoy it in a different way. I kind of enjoy that, you know, my son texts me and says I'm on my way from Palos Verdes, and could you put the coffee on for me? I don't know why. I just enjoy that. But I do think that a lot of people suffer a little bit of depression around the holidays, especially like kind of right around Christmas morning, because Norman Rockwell hasn't come through with his promise of that perfect Christmas, and it's not really what they dreamt of. and they're a little deflated by it. And I think attitude is everything. And one of the things I've, after being alive since, I don't know, I'm 200 or something next year, you either roll with the punches or you live a very miserable life. One of my other stories in the book is about the first time that my husband's family came to Thanksgiving dinner at our house, and there had been some sort of mix-up with the invitation, and I thought they were coming at 2, and they weren't here at 2, and I'm trying to keep everything warm and nice, before they get here. And I walk in the kitchen at one point, and our cat is straddling the turkey, eating the breast. And at this point, it's like I just cut that part off and didn't tell anybody, and they didn't show up till 4:30. So, it's like, what am I supposed to do with that? I can't be mad. I can't be mad. It's just, and writing this column has been great because I look forward to something breaking in my house or some turn of events that I can, go, let me tell you what happened to me this week. Did it ever happen to you? And that's. That's the gratitude, that's my reward for, sharing this column and sharing these things with the people of Placentia, because I get emails that are like, that happened to me, and this is what happened. And it just feels so good to be part of a community.
Well, so before we go any farther, how do people read your weekly column?
Well, it's published on Fridays. And it's published through, they would actually find it through the Orange County Register. The Orange County Register has done, a pretty good job of having weekly area newspapers, area-centric. You can get online, you can get stories about national news and international news, but the stories about your local town, there isn't always a place, for reporting them. And the Orange County Register has all these Orange County towns. Yorba Linda has its own newspaper. Fullerton has its own newspaper. And the Placentia has the Placentia News Times. And we get to hear about, what the city council is doing and why is Kramer Boulevard so, torn up. And so we need that kind of hometown information. So they would log into the Orange County Register and look up my name in the Placentia News Times.
I love that. And so how did you get the job in the first place?
Well, I've always loved to write essays. I started not as an author, but I started my writing career writing journalistic pieces for a horse magazine. But I wanted to write essays. I wanted to write more. And I'm looking through the Placentia News Times one day, and I notice they don't have any kind of slice of life, column. So I wrote what is arguably the worst query letter in history. I mean, I should really just teach a class on it, because it's a classic example of what not to do.
Uh-huh.
So first of all, I knew enough to know that a query should be one page and one page only. My query was a little bit bigger than that, so I just shrunk down the font. Okay. Oh, my God.
Do they need a microscope to read it?
Yeah, right. Like 10 point. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And then, I'm pitching a humor column. I wasn't funny. I wasn't funny at all. But what I didn't know was that they were losing a columnist.
Oh.
So they had space. I didn't know this. And it was a psychologist giving advice, about kids and families and things like that. She was going on to syndication, so she wasn't going to be in their paper anymore. Now, here's the bad part about that. She did her column for free because it was free advertising.
Sure.
So they said, we would love to have – they asked for samples. I sent in my samples. Fortunately, the samples were funny. They said, we would love to have you come. Here's the kicker. We can't pay you until we have money in the budget. And we won't have money in the budget until next January. This is March. So am I willing to write a column a week from March through December with the promise of starting to get paid in January?
That's a leap of faith.
Yeah, I talked to everybody around me who mostly said, no, you need to ask them for money, you need to do this and that. And in the end, you know, I had this inner voice that said, shut up, you're doing the column. So I did the column. It was a leap of faith, but in January they came through with the contract. It's not a huge amount of money. I will not retire on this salary. But they pay me once a month. So, and I get to meet all these fabulous people that live in Placentia. So, which is why I wanted to do these three books of columns, to just honor this community that I've been, you know, invited into, basically.
So how is your job, if you even call it a job, how has your role changed from, I guess, even from like a technology standpoint to just even how you approach your column, you know, from 10 years ago till today?
Well, I've gotten a lot more streamlined about it. When I first started the column, I had basically plotted out, I always had plotted out 2 months worth of columns, what I was going to talk about. And I would get my editor's approval. And then probably around the January timeframe when I started getting paid, she no longer asked for what I was writing about in the next month. And I started to get a little more relaxed and not have to have everything so very rigid. So a lot of times I don't have my idea for a column until, you know, the day I'm supposed to write it. So in that way, it's changed. I think my writing's gotten tighter, a lot tighter. I've been able to use a lot more what you would use in humor writing. One of the big things to use in humor writing is that idea of the punchline, because a lot of humor is set up and then punchline. No matter what kind of humor it is, it's set up, punchline. One of the things I found is that if you separate, I know this sounds technical, if you separate the punchline into its own paragraph, it has more impact than if you put it at the end of the paragraph, because it's, you can lose it.
How did you figure that out? Was it just trial and error? Did you take a class on that and they said, don't put it in the end of the paragraph, make it its own?
Yeah, you know, one of my mentors that writes humor essays, you know, he pointed this out as something you can do. And then I started noticing it in, you know, in Dave Barry and in other humor essayists that they, you know, they really want to draw your eye to the funny.
Have you ever written a funny that you thought was hysterical and maybe even your editor thought was hysterical, and then when it got published, everybody was like, boy, that was a stinker?
I haven't had that thing where everybody tells me that just didn't go over. But I have had, you know, my editor has received complaints that I'm not funny. So,
really?
And every time she puts one in the letters to the editor, you know, the next week there are like three letters to the editor saying, you leave Gail alone. We like her. You know, you're a humorless old man. So shut up. So if they still come, I don't know that she even bothers with them anymore. Sometimes
That's
she'll
funny.
Pass them on to me.
Well, you know,
here's the thing, though. I have to tell you, Garrett, you know, humor is, of all of our senses, I mean, we talk about having a sense of humor. Humor is subjective.
Yeah.
It's completely subjective. So what, you know, things I find funny, you may not find that funny, and vice versa. And we don't say it's because we don't like a certain type of humor. We say, I didn't laugh, therefore that wasn't funny. You know, I'm not a big fan of scatological humor. I'm just not. My son could laugh all day long at fart jokes. So, you know, I can tell you that, you know, I didn't laugh at that joke, but it's not because it wasn't funny to someone. Because it wasn't funny to me, because I'm not a fan of that kind of humor.
Right.
So, you know, humor writing is, it's a scary, scary world.
Well, do you think now that you've done this for 10 years, for 52 weeks a year, and you've got, you know, a gajillion different columns that are out there, that, you know, how far in the process did you figure out that you were kind of like hitting your stride?
Oh, huh. Probably about the fourth year, I started to feel super comfortable. I started to understand the way I was writing a lot more, and I was able to use it a lot more, because I like to start, I'll work one of two ways on a column, whichever feels the most natural. Either I'll start with a universal observation and then apply it to me, or I'll start with something personal that happened to me and make it a universal observation. But I always want to have, I want to include everybody else. But if there's any laughs to be had, I laugh at me first. So that's my cardinal rule. Always laugh at myself first.
Where did you learn that lesson from? Because I honestly love that type of self-deprecating humor. I always find that I relate better to the humorist, the comedian, the author, when they're telling a story, but they throw themselves under the bus first versus, here, I'm going to shove my Aunt Martha under the bus. I don't really necessarily find that funny, but when it's like, you know, Gail throws herself underneath the bus, oh my gosh, I'm peeing my pants and I need the pens. So, you know, how did, you know, again, you know, I'm asking you like you're a magician. I want you to tell us all your secrets, but where did you say, you know, I think this is how it's going to work best.
Well, I learned the art of storytelling basically from my own grandmother. I think every family has, well, many people in it that tell stories. And as you sit around as a kid and listen, you find out who the exciting storyteller is and who the boring storyteller is. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of gravitate to the one who tells it in a very, very fun and or interesting, or, you know, keeps you on the edge of your seat sort of way. And my grandmother was one of those people, and she had miles and miles of stories of growing up poor in the Ozarks, and I'd just sit and listen for hours. And, you know, she was, you know, she's a simple country girl, and so she would just tell stories about the stupid mistakes she would make. And it kind of, you know, it just kind of ingrained in me that kind of the most fun stories are the ones where you've put yourself under the bus. You know, I don't know why. I don't know that there have been, like, scientific studies to find why that is funnier than pushing somebody else under the bus. But you know, she taught me everything I know.
I love it. Everybody, we have another half an hour of Gail Carline coming up next, including a guest caller that wants to ask Gail burning questions of the day. But before we get to that second half of the show, we've got a couple of commercial breaks we're going to take. So we'll be back in 2 minutes and 30 seconds sharp. So sit back and enjoy hearing about It Matters Radio and Rainbow Brew.
Once again, we're here to discuss It Matters Radio, live talk radio at its best.
Yes, indeed. I must say my involvement was quite pleasurable.
And this is Dr. Thurston Thursday, yes, who was a guest just a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Doctor, what did you talk about on your visit to It Matters Radio?
Not quite sure. You see, I'm a medium, and I used to be a large, but I lost some weight.
I see.
In my position, I communicate with spirits from the other side.
The other side of what?
Again, not sure, but I hear a voice coming through.
Excuse me. I have a few more things to say about the Watergate. Beautiful hotel, lousy service. Keep in mind, I'm not a crook.
Is this Richard Nixon?
I'm afraid I can't reveal that. However, I can reveal that the 18 minutes have been found.
Yes, quiet. I like that.
Wow, yes. That was weird.
You think that's weird? Wait until Truman Capote tries to come through.
It Matters Radio prides itself on bringing new talent to the forefront. Music, opinion, and spoken word, with emphasis on finding the hottest indie artists from around the world. unheralded books, and important causes. We like to think of ourselves as discoverers.
Yes, I know. I like to think of myself as almost anyone that comes through right here on our really big show.
It Matters Radio with host Monica Brinkman, co-host Kenneth Ween, and co-host Carrie Hall on Thursday evenings, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific.
They're not on our really big show. But tonight, Little Tupper Gigio, the aerial photos of Kate Smith, and right here on our stage, the entire United States Naval Submarine Fleet, right here on our really big show.
It Matters Radio, Thursday evenings at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. Discover the depth, diversity, meaningfulness, caring, guest-focused, friendly, enjoyable atmosphere of It Matters Radio with Ken, Monica, and Carrie.
And the Beatles. Yes, excellent. Why?
Because it matters.
Yes, of course.
When it comes to coffee, freshness is queen. That's why Rainbow Brew believes you should have the freshest coffee, roasted to order in small batches and delivered to your door within a couple days. Whether you're purchasing for a coffee shop, restaurant, or home, Rainbow Brew is your one-stop shop for fair trade and organic coffee. Offering many unique blends, including AM 950's own Blue State blend. That's Rainbow Brew, the queen bean, a proud sponsor of the Morning Grind. Online at rainbowbrew.com. Brew something good today.
So that is our sponsor, Rainbow Brew, out of Minneapolis, St. Paul. I love talking about them because it just stuns me that people can grow coffee beans in the frozen tundra of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and then come out with amazing flavors of coffee. So if you would like to try them out, go to rainbowbrew.com. Tell them I sent you. They'll probably even give you a special deal because you mentioned Rated G Radio. And then the other spot you heard is with It Matters Radio. I'm going to call them kind of like a branding partner. They're branding Rated G Radio on their program. I'm branding their show here. They're live every Thursday night at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So, you know, Thursday nights, if you want to make it a radio thing or radio night, you get home from work and you sit down, you can listen to It Matters Radio for an hour and then turn into Rated G Radio and hear fascinating authors like Gail Carline or whoever we have on the show on Thursday at 7 o'clock. And do that. So we're going to actually have it's Monica and Kenneth from It Matters Radio on in a few weeks, and then sometime in December I'm going to be on their show, and really looking forward to that. So I don't want to say the competition, but check out these other shows because they're bringing you fantastic content all the time. Real quick reminder, at 7:32, we got a half an hour left. We have a brand new thing that we're offering to all of the Rated G Radio listeners. It's called the Superstar Swag, and I put this together because we have so many best-selling authors like Gail Carline. We have people who have won Grammys. We have people who have won Emmys. We have filmmakers who are all on the show, and they come on, and we have a great time with them for, you know, the time that they're on. Usually it's the hour. And then after that, you know, they go away and go live their lives and make brilliant projects and write new books and things like that. And oftentimes I get people pinging me, who is that author that was on the show? It was Gail Carline. What was that book that she was talking about? Murder on the Hoof. How do I go find? You go to Amazon. So instead of trying to answer the same question for everybody all the time, I've put together this great resource called the Rated G Radio Superstar Swag. It's going to be on every show on Rated G Radio, including the one tonight. It lists all of the guests that have been on the show forever. And if I've left anybody out, it's only because we've had so many that I went back through my show logs and I've accidentally missed them. So I'm telling everybody, if I've missed you, let me know. But thankfully, Gail Carline's books are the featured books on the main book page. I didn't even put them in the mystery category. Well, they're in the mystery category too, but they're on the main page. So if you want to go get any of her, I don't want to say old books, because her old books are great books, but her books are there for you, and it's convenient shopping on Amazon on a secure storefront, so you don't have to worry about anything weird or hinky going on. You can get all of these great books perfect in time for the holidays. The three books you can't get until this weekend are Gail's three new books. Gail, what are those three new books again?
They're called Raising the Perfect Family and Other Tall Tales, You're From Where, and Holly Jolly Holidays.
And I think during the break, Gail was telling me they're going to be available on paperback initially, and then they'll transition over into ebooks in a short time after that. So if you'd like to wait until Friday night or Saturday to go get her three new books, that's really cool too. But in the meantime, if you're just really aching for some of Gail's work, you can go buy it tonight. Right now, I want to jump to the phones. We have a mystery caller that wants to call in and talk to Gail. Mystery caller on line 12, you are now live with Gail. Welcome to the show. Jeff, that's you.
Is that me?
That's you.
Line 12, I thought it was line 6. I'm so sorry. Gail, can you teach me how to be funny? Gail, can you teach me how to be funny?
Jeff, you already are funny. Mystery caller.
I'm so excited about your books, Gail. This is
going to
be fun. I've got a whole section on my Kindle that's Gail Carline. You understand that?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
I still haven't forgiven you for Benny. But
His house had to burn, Jeff.
I know. We've had this discussion. It was tough, but
tough.
You know, what I love is he had the ashtray.
He had the ashtray, and he's buying new stuff. No one else can know. It's just between the audience and you and me. All right. And Garrett. All right. One of the things that Benny, his first purchase in the new book, is he buys the spittoon that was used in the very first scene of Rio Bravo. And he's thrilled with it.
For those that don't know, Benny is the main character in a series of novels that Gail has written. At least he's the main character as far as I'm concerned. I love that character, Gail.
You know, Benny was supposed to be the character that appeared once in the very first book, and then I was going to bring him back in about four books, and everyone, you either really love him or really hate him. Everyone kept saying, well, you're bringing him back, right? And I kind of went, sure. So, of course, I found a really annoying way to bring him back to make you either love him more or hate him more.
Yeah. He's that
so
friend
I can't
that we all
teach you to be funny.
Okay. He's that friend that we all have, you know.
He is. I think
we've all known Benny's
in our life.
Yeah, we're never sure why we maintain the friendship. It's sort of like, what would we do
there's
without that person
there.
That
there's
could feel
that,
better about ourselves?
There's that light somehow that they still have something that pulls us into their circle. You know, I've stopped asking myself why. you just Benny, for people that don't know, I created a character that has OCD and has Asperger's. So, you know, two things that go together so well. And so, I don't know. He's irritating and he can also be understandable and he can come through in a clinch. So I think you'll like him in the new book just as well.
Good. I'm looking forward to that. So, and I thought it was funny because you said you know that you're writing a humor column and then you described disastrous things happening. You know, as well as.
You know, I guess the glass is half full or half empty, and you know, and when I was an engineer, it was just twice as big as it needed to be. But, you know, since I retired from that, you know, my glass is always half full, and it's rose colored. So, you know, I'm always really happy when something breaks.
When something breaks.
Yeah, like score. I have a column. You know, well, my son is kind of tired of the columns about him. So, and Dale swears that he's going to write a rebuttal when I talk about him, but so far he hasn't tried that anymore.
Yeah.
So.
Well, everybody, just a real quick note here. The mystery caller that we have here is Mr. Jeff Michaels, and Jeff is a celebrated author that is going to be on the show this coming Tuesday, October 13th. We're going to be talking about all of Jeff's books, too. And Jeff and Gail are, you know, best friends and go to writers' conferences and see each other and are just awesome people to know in life in general. But we'll be talking more to Jeff on Tuesday.
I appreciate the talk there, Garrett, but I really wanted to prop Gail up here because
Gail rocks.
She does. She's a wonderful author. She does a great job. We are friends. We are part of the Southern California Writers Conference staff, and she did a knockout job last weekend, or was that last weekend, Gail? 2 weekends ago.
It was some weekend. I've slept
since
then.
I know, we lose track because of those rogue sessions, those late night rogue sessions. Please, anybody that's listening, hello. Grab your Kindle, your Amazon account. Go to Garrett's special page and do yourself a big favor and pick up some of Gail's mysteries. And that Snoopy biography, that was pretty good too, Gail.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I like your stuff. So
yeah.
Thank you.
So give,
well,
give Gail props.
You're in a long line of readers there on that one, Jeff. Jeff, thanks for the call. We'll talk to you.
No worries.
I'll see you this weekend. But have a great night. Thanks for calling in.
Good to hear you, Gail. Bye bye.
Thanks, Jeff.
So, you even have fellow writers calling in and singing your praises. So that must mean that you're a great writer. Okay, I do have a question. I want to talk to you about where you're going to be this Saturday. So we're going to get to that. We're going to talk more about your books. But one of the things that I thought was really interesting is because I always think that, when I have writers on the show, we don't really talk about like writer's phobias or things that happen to writers where they get stuck or, really their process. It's just like you've got this glorious new book out, Murder on the Hoof, and you read it from page 1 to 500 and everything works out magically and it's just great. But we don't ever really talk to the writers about, well, what happens when this happens or that happens, and how do you get through that? And we were having lunch a couple of Sundays ago, and one of the things that I was just kind of floored at is the fact that as a writer, you said you had, sometimes you had difficulty with, certain parts of your writing process. And I, number one, admired the fact that you were talking about it, but I've never heard a writer actually talk about that before. So when you, get into, a story, a short story, a column, a book, how do you get, how do you find it within yourself to get from point A to Z? And when you're around LMNOP, you kind of get stuck with the details. How do you get through that?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. And sometimes it takes you, a couple of days to get through it. Sometimes it takes you a couple of months to get through it. It depends on how stuck you are. And it's not really, I know people talk about writer's block. It's not a writer's block. It's that, for me at least, I tend to see my books in my head as movies. And so the action is unfolding as a, physical scene. And I can see the first part of the book and how I get into it and how I get set up. And then I see the last part of the book and I see how that final action scene is going to go. And I see a little bit of how the wrap up would wrap a lot of things up. But that middle section, on the one hand, I kind of like in the middle section, just seeing where my characters are going to take me in the situations. On the other hand, I know I've got to get them. They've got to converge on that last scene because I'm set on that last scene. So I do get stuck sometimes in the forward progression of what's going on. One of the things I do, I'll do a couple of things. One of the things I do, I keep, in addition to keeping a very, very loose outline about where things are going, I keep kind of a hindsight outline. After I finish a few chapters, I'll go back and just on a spreadsheet just put in very loose notes about what happened in this last chapter, so I can see the progression of how the book is actually going. So I'll read that through a couple of times, and that'll give me an idea of where to go next. The other thing I do, this is just sad, but I'll do it, especially with my Perry character. If I'm writing a scene and I'm bored, or if I'm bored, the reader is going to be bored. So that scares me. So if I'm writing a scene, it's not working. I really just take a heavy object and hit her over the head. That poor woman has more concussions. I throw her in danger. It's like whatever's happening, it's not to my taste. So So she opens a closet and there's, you know, a body falls out or, you know, just something that, you know, I hit her in the head with a golf club in one book. I had a guy, she was going through Benny's house looking for a piece of paper, and there was a guy hiding in the closet, and he jumped out at her and ran off, knocked her down and ran off. So, yeah, I just abuse my characters when I'm stuck.
It's a good thing she doesn't play for the NFL.
She would have severe head trauma. I know. I don't think I can let her get hit in the head anymore because she's been hit a couple of times.
So you have this really spectacular thing that's happening on Saturday. Tell everybody what's going on.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'd do a girl squeal here, except that, you know.
That's fine.
It would hurt
the ears. If you don't,
ears.
I will, and they'll think it's you.
Okay.
Okay, there you go.
So here's what I – so the second Saturday of October every year, Placentia has a heritage festival where we celebrate all things Placentia. So we start off by a pancake breakfast that is organized and held by one of our philanthropic organizations in town. And then we have a parade down Kramer Boulevard. And then in Tri-City Park, we have a whole festival where there are booths of things to buy and booths of all of our philanthropic organizations and a beer garden and food and music and car shows and all sorts of things. So it's a huge, a whole day long. Starts from like, I think the pancake breakfast actually starts at like 7 in the morning, and it goes all the way to 4 p.m. So because I am, in addition to being an author and everything else, I am a trustee of the Placentia Library. So as a trustee, I can ride in the library float in the parade. So I will ride in the parade, I'll wave at everyone, and then when the parade ends at the park, I get out of the parade and I run over to my booth, and my booth this year will be launching the 3 books. So I'm going to have swag to give away, I'm going to have baskets of goodies to give away, I'm going to have some Halloween candies and some drinks, not alcoholic, to give away. I'm going to have, you know, discount prices on my books so you can pick them up for, you know, next to nothing. And we're just going to have a fun day of just hanging out together and having fun.
So, and remind everybody where it's going to be again and how can they get more information easily. And I'm baiting you to talk about your Facebook post where it has all the details.
Oh, cool. Okay. So it's going to be in Tri-City Park, and Tri-City Park is in Placentia. It's on Kramer Boulevard, just south of Imperial. So the festival hours are from 10 to 4. I will, of course, be riding into parade until it ends, I think, around 10:30 or so. You can get more information. Well, you can go to my Facebook page and get all the information and more. Or you can go to the City of Placentia's website, which I believe is placentia.org, and click on Heritage Festival, and you can get all the information there. And but if you go on my Facebook page or my blog, go on my blog. I just wrote a new blog post. There'll be a picture. I did a tech rehearsal with my booth to make sure it was going to get set up the way I wanted it to get set up. So you're going to go to the Heritage Festival and look for a bright yellow canopy with my name and picture plastered across the front of it. And inside you'll find treats galore.
Treats galore anywhere is a great thing. But treats galore with your books is even better.
Oh, and the blog, I forgot. It's gailcarline.blogspot.com.
Well, we have to talk about that. So
yeah.
do you like writing? I mean, because, you know, you've been a writer, you know, you always say like a writer writes always, but you had like a different career before you decided, you know what, I'm going to be a writer full time and do all of this. Do you find that writing today is easier for you than it was, you know, back in the day when you had like all these, you know, fresh ideas, or is it harder now?
I would say, well, the columns have gotten easier, Although, if you know, if nothing significant happens to me during a week, I get a little worried. It's like, you know, somebody do something so that I can talk about, you know, how I would have done it stupidly. The novel writing, I have to say, I thought it would get easier. I thought I would get the process down and I'd become like James Patterson that just pumps them out. Of course, now he has a paid staff to do that, but I thought it would just, it would get easier, that I would understand my process. And it turns out my process is this ever-evolving thing that with each book, it needs something different. So in that part, you know, back when I was an engineer and thought I knew how to do things logically, writing novels was probably a little bit easier because I had this, you know, step-by-step method. And once I let my muse in on, you know, what was happening and let my characters take control, that part kind of went away.
Interesting. I think that, you know, it's interesting, you know, reading the books that you write and the stories that you put together, and you say, well, you know, if Perry gets put in a spot and I don't know what to do, I hit her over the head, you know, because sometimes it's like that's the trademark thing. You know, a lot of authors will get into a situation where, you know, that, you know, I wonder if this is where Perry's going to get head over the head or something like that, and become something that, you know, people expect or they look forward to. Poor Perry. But you know, I think that, you know, as you continue to write your books, that your characters, you know, you end up creating fans out of the characters that you write. Is that something that you ever thought that you'd be doing, is having characters that really have this popularity? You know, because, I mean, here we have, you know, Jeff Michaels calling in, and he writes all these great spirituality books and fantasy books, and he's writing in to talk about Benny. I mean, how often does that happen?
Yeah, when I started writing the Perry books, I often saw it as being a TV series on USA, because they were always talking on USA about characters, about having unique characters. And I do love a book that I may not remember much of the plot, but the characters live with me. So I always wanted to build strong and, you know, three-dimensional. I wanted to make real people.
Well, and you do. Because, I mean, you read the books and you feel like you know these people, and they're your friends, and they're people that you spend holidays with. You like Holly Jolly Holidays, available this Friday and Saturday. Okay, sorry, we're going to have to pitch your books one more time. But it's like you know the characters, and it's like, you know, they become extensions of your life. And so I think that's one reason I like when you write and it's another Perry book, you know, you're going to get the usual cast of characters in there, because those are your friends, and you want to hear what's been going on in their lives. And you can't believe whatever, you know, calamity is about to befall or has befallen. And, you know, how are they going to get out of it this time? So
right,
I appreciate your writing style. Gail, one more time, tell us about your blog, where people should find you, where we're going to see you on Saturday, and then we're going to wish you well and send you off into the sunset for the night.
Okay, well, if nothing else, you can go to my website, gailcarline.com. Very easy to remember, it's my name. And that will point you toward my blog, that will point you toward my Facebook, toward Twitter, toward the whole nine yards. So you can always just go to my website. This Saturday, you can find me either waving with my cowboy hat with the tiara from the parade venue, or I will be in my booth giving away baskets. My baskets are going to have some pretty cool stuff, not just signed books, but I'm going to have some gift cards in there. I'm going to give out one an hour, or anytime you walk up to me in the booth and say, "I shot a man in Reno," I will give you a basket.
Wow.
Just because I've always wanted to use that in conversation, although I've never wanted to actually shoot anyone, that I will admit to. Yeah. I just think that's a great line from a song. I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. And, you know, it's gruesome, but I know I'm a comedy writer. I shouldn't be doing gruesome, but, you know, it just seems like that's something I could say casually at a dinner party. And, you know,
I think you need to make T-shirts out of this. So maybe next year. But, okay, last question of the night. What do you want to do in the next 10 years? How do you want your career to progress?
In the next 10 years, I have a whole list of books that I want to write. Next year, the fourth Perry book will come out. Again, another exclusive, Garrett Miller exclusive.
Woo!
I'm only doing one more book in the Perry series, so there will be five total. And okay. I already know what it will be about.
Okay.
So there will be one more book there. After I get done with this fourth Perry book, though, I'm working on a pirate fantasy because I woke up one day and said, you know what? There aren't enough girl pirates. So, I've got 10,000 words on that written, and she's already killed three Spaniards. So
she's
a bad girl. She's been busy. And then I have to write another sequel to Murder on the Hoof because without giving anything away, I wrote Murder on the Hoof as a romantic suspense, and apparently in my love triangle, somebody does not get their happily ever after, so I have to write another book to give that person, that unnamed person, their happily ever after. So there will be at least one more Murder on the Hoof series with those cast of characters. So, Garrett, I just
you're gonna
keep
be busy.
Thinking of one more thing to write. And in 10 years, I just want to keep writing. I want to keep riding my horse. I want to go see my son playing gigs because he's a fabulous musician. And, and I want to keep knowing you. So.
Well, that's a guarantee.
You think we can do that?
That's
okay.
It's a requirement. I already signed the contract. We're going to be best friends.
Okay, cool.
So there you go. Cool. So
yay.
Everybody, it's Gail Carline. Go buy her books tonight. Help support this great independent writer, author, and comedian. And catch her this Saturday. And folks, that's it. I'm going to play a little bit of Witch Sisters Halloween as our musical outro for the night. But again, tomorrow, 7 p.m. Pacific time, Mary Lou interviews Caroline Hammond in hour one. And then I'm taking your requests in hour two. Don't drive distracted. And thank you for being part of this show, Reda G Radio. We'll see you tomorrow.
What do we have here?
Met three sisters on the beach alone that Friday night. Gathered near a campfire kiln, their fire burned so bright. They each got up and took their turn, looking me up and down. Can we trust him? And we tell him they would circle round. The harvest moon above was full, but showed their scary smiles. Come sit with us, the three agreed, you'll want to stay a while.
This Halloween is full of tricks.
glamour, beauty,
hags,
little tricks, and jinxes mad, enchanting. Their cackles high into the night, they swept into the sky. They said, return next Halloween,
the kitsch will reignite!
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.